273, the Big Ten title preview episode. Boy, am I glad we're here. We can't wait to be in Indy. We're going to talk about coaching carousel, CFP rankings, bowl projections, and we're joined by Steve Dace, who many of you are familiar with. He's going to help us preview the Michigan Wolverines. All of that in this episode. You guys know what it is. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 273 of the podcast. I'm checking in from a new location, finally in Nashville, Tennessee. Just got here today. Kevin and Tyler told me that I was lacking a little bit of energy, so I'm going to pose this question to them, trying to potentially bring the energy to this podcast. Fellas, what is better than football?
What is better than football?
Well, championship football, motherfuckers. Hey. And guess what? It's championship week, baby. And that's the type of energy.
There we go. I was about to say, I don't have an answer for you.
I was like, does he want me to say sex? I'm confused.
Nope. Oh, well, that'd be false.
Nope. That doesn't come close. Big Ten championship football is so many tiers above sex that they don't even belong in the same sentence. Kluver, take it from here.
Hey, must be nice, baby. Must be nice. That's a nice intro. Drake. You know, I've questioned their loyalty before, both of these guys, Kevin, Drake.
You haven't been questioning my loyalty in a long time. It's been like a year, at least.
It's been a while on Drake.
Maybe Drake's even like 15 months.
That's true. It's been a while on Drake. Kevin, it's sort of a weekly thing. And that's okay, because we like that he keeps us on edge.
And I've gotten $0 from this podcast. So
and I haven't paid him a dime. And to be honest, for quarter three, I've also gotten $0 for the podcast. But that's neither here nor there. Drake, if anybody was questioning the loyalty, that at least ends for a month today, because he drove, what was it, 16 hours yesterday?
It was probably a full 15 yesterday and at least 10 today.
15 hours to Texas yesterday, stayed over in Texas, woke up this morning, dealt with a bunch of people from Arkansas on the drive.
Let me tell you something about Arkansas. Arkansas can be removed from planet Earth via nuclear bomb, and all of the truck drivers who are hauling freight with the license plates from Arkansas can go right to hell with them, because Interstate 30 that turns into Interstate 40 going east across the United States through the gigantic state of Texas and into Arkansas is so infested with truck drivers. It is five semis to one car.
Oof.
For a stretch of 150, maybe 200 miles. Dude, I am not shitting you when I tell you that the highway was far too narrow and there was three times too high a density of trucks, that with a speed limit of 75, we were averaging a speed of about 67 in the fast lane. And I had hours and hours and hours behind me and hours ahead of me. And I was not real thrilled to be doing 8 miles an hour under the speed limit due to some cocksucking semis deciding to drag race each other down the interstate. I digress.
And this is why I am surprised that it's not just the Kevin and Tyler special tonight. Kevin, how has your last 3 days been since the Hawks decided to eke their way into the bowl game with the help of the Gophers?
Pretty good, man. I've been sleeping like a baby these last two nights. I mean,
dude, have you? Because I haven't. Last night I woke up at 3:30 and I was restless for 3 hours, 2.5 hours until Lauren and I woke up, because all I could think about was the excitement of being a fan for this trip around to Indy, but then also the boys are coming to town and we're doing a little meetup. Okay. And the walk-ons have not done, I've been talking about this, the walk-ons have not been in the same place in a public setting as the walk-ons, right? Like for an event that is our thing since the 2019 Kansas City Golf Tournament. And that was when we were nobodies. Granted, not really anybody now, but we're more than we were. And I've got a feeling, boys, that this, you know, this 3-6 time window at Tin Roof Indianapolis, bar about a mile northeast of the stadium, it's going to get rowdy. It's going to get a little rowdy. And we're also going to do a pregame show, the show that I do normally after with Doug Wagner on 600 WMT. We are going to do the pregame Iowa Bumper Brigade featuring Kevin Ward, featuring Drake Kulik. They're going to make appearances on the show as well. That's going to be interesting. And I hope to see all of you beautiful people there smoked in Hawkeye colors, just beer, food, and good times. And I was awake at 4 a.m. thinking about it because I'm a little anxious. I want to start with this. We're gonna two-part this episode. There's going to be one cut in the middle because I got a few topics to talk about in between. The coaching carousel of college football. Oof. Now, what would
that
it...
Some bitch, if it was an actual carousel, would be tossing kids off how fast that thing's going.
That thing is spinning now. Spinning.
The carnage is running that thing, jammed that lever forward too far and broke it off.
Now, Lincoln Riley, reportedly, what was the number?
$110
million. $110
million. I didn't see over how many years, though.
They were buying his two houses in Oklahoma. Excessive. Hey, don't need two.
So I think he was currently living in one. They're building a new one to move in.
Okay. Makes more sense, but still. They were also going to buy his new house, $6 million reportedly, in L.A., and they were going to give him unlimited 24/7 use of the private jet. Now, I say to you, where do you find any cons to that situation? How do you turn down that job, even if you're the most loyal guy on earth? Like, tell me where.
Well, here's your answer. Because $110 million turns into $50 million when you're in L.A.
That's true.
So really, he signed for 10 years, $50 million, not 10 years, $110 million.
That is trash.
Secondly, he has to live in L.A. He has to put up with L.A., everything, the homelessness, the pretentious cunts everywhere, the traffic, the mayors and the governors. And, I mean, you have to put up with so much bullshit that you couldn't get me to move to L.A. for 10 years, $50 million. It's not
honestly
do a full job with all the stress that comes with being a football team, head football coach, especially at USC when he's got the job of now completely overhauling their program recruiting wise because they've got a bunch of front running pussies and instilling a new culture. And I mean, the guy does not have that desirable job staring him in the face. And he also has to live in LA, which, I mean, you actually couldn't pay me to do it.
So I'm with Drake to a degree. The worst part about that situation for me is having to live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because I think that sounds horrible.
Well, the tax thing Drake brought up was actually a really good point, too.
Yeah, but you got to imagine most of that's coming from the federal government, which you're not escaping unless you move to Columbia.
No, he's paying 13% to the state of Los Angeles or state of California and city of Los Angeles combined just so that he can then pay an insanely inflated amount for property, an insanely inflated amount for gas, food, living, et cetera, et cetera. And then he has to deal with LA. Like, it is so many tiers of negative things that I'm actually surprised that they were able to get a coach as high value as Lincoln Riley.
But private jet. Private jet, right?
And
because then you don't have to live in LA. You just take the private jet every morning.
Right. Yeah. And I also love I don't know if it was Kevin or you, Drake, who put the other stipulation in there in our chat, but I think that would be a good one to add into the fine details of the contract. Not gonna say it on the podcast.
I don't remember it. I don't think it was me because I don't remember it.
Okay. It was Kevin. Which doesn't surprise me at all. And you guys thought this was going to get political when we cut to Steve Dace in the middle of this podcast, who I reviewed or previewed Michigan with. That is going to be a treat for you guys. About 32 minutes of an absolute encyclopedia of Michigan football, not just Michigan football, but Big Ten football in general. So stick around for that. It's a really good segment. But Kelly getting $15 million a year to go to LSU?
I think it was like 9.5 base with like incentives built in on top of that.
And gave his team, which I just watched right before we started the episode, a nice little 4-minute goodbye speech.
Someone recorded it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I got to see this.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that one?
Is 4 minutes too long or too short?
I would say it's a little too short.
Oh, I was thinking it was too long. If you're leaving, get the fuck out. I don't need 4 minutes from you. Give me 40 seconds and get the fuck out of my face.
You're just a different guy, man. But
yeah, so I mean, like, was it just like he gave a speech and left? Did he answer questions? Give him a hug or anything? Or
I don't believe so. I cut it off right at last 30 seconds, because honestly, I was kind of like Drake. I was like, I'm fucking over this. You know,
how was the speech? Was it, you know?
It was very much
in the front row where you'd be like, what would you be like, Drake? Like, just stop wasting my time, asshole.
I think you'd be leaning towards that side. Yeah, it was non-inspiring. He talked about how the last 12 years of his life have been the best 12 years of his life, and he needs a new challenge. And yeah,
needs a new challenge. Last I recall, he has not won an national.
I was going to say, just take the challenge on of bringing a natty to Notre Dame. How about that?
Or like what have they been in the playoff two times or three times?
I don't know.
Well, they went to the national, the BCS before it was,
yeah.
They got their asses whooped, and I think they're in the playoff twice and got their asses whooped both times. So not sure he's lacking in any
challenges. Yeah, it's a little tough.
I mean, yeah, it's.
I mean,
it's tough when you have these coaches, you know, going out recruiting and talking to these parents and talking to their kids, like, hey, like, you know, I want your son to come play for us. I want you to be all about Notre Dame or Oklahoma, whatever that is. Talking about the culture you're building, and then bounce. And on the other side, these guys are getting offered just stupid amounts of money. Like, honestly, I do not believe that a head coach is worth $110 million. I think what you get is got to be from the whole staff. Like, KF, if you gave him a dog shit staff, KF wouldn't win 2 games a year. You know, it's about the whole staff that makes it up. And I just can't justify giving one single guy.
Hey, Kevin, don't forget. Don't forget. Brian sucks.
I can't justify giving one guy over $10 million a year. Because what is the head coach to you guys? What is the head coach in your guys' eyes to the program?
He provides.
He's the president. Like the president of the United States. He's the face. And he, everything runs through him, but he builds a team of advisors and people who he deems good for his direction.
He is the decision maker who puts in place the other decision makers.
Right. Just like what's the head of a university? You know? What does the head of a university really do besides sit there and look pretty and meet with other dudes that look pretty and talk about how much money that the universities are making?
So this is where I was going with this. Like, you have your one guy, he's got his vision of his culture,
yeah,
what type of football they're going to play and the guys he wants to bring in. That's it. And he has to bring in these guys, these coaches, these strength coaches, and these players that fit that vision and make it kind of happen on the field. But none of that can happen without the staff around you. None of that can happen with the players that you bring in. And I just got to believe that it kind of hurts your, you know, prestige a little bit to make moves like that. You know?
You're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Kevin, you don't think that the amount of money is too much, or maybe you do. You think that it's distributed unevenly
level. I mean, don't get me wrong. College football is a massive business.
Yeah.
I'm sure a successful USC team more than pays for what they would what they're paying Lincoln Riley. You know, I don't think they're losing. They wouldn't make this investment if they were losing money on it. And that's some boosters out there just paying for all of it.
Right.
Who just cares about USC football that much or LSU football that much. But yeah, I do believe, like, you know, it's a team effort. And by a team effort, I mean like the whole staff's effort. I can't justify a head coach making $10 million while he's paying his running backs coach like $250,000.
Yeah. You know, so, like, yeah. So
SC's football team is really that much in the green. It would have to be from their TV deals and stuff, because from what I understand, like, SC fans, because I'm good friends with an SC fan, and like, they have been turned off from the program for a while. So like, the program hasn't been doing all the numbers that like the Hawks would have been in ticket sales and merchandise sales and yada, yada, yada. Cause people have just kind of like not been caring about the university from what I understand.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they've had a pretty downturn. They've run through a bunch of coaches recently, and
so it must be,
I think they're fighting to go 6-6 this week. You know, I can understand why the fans aren't like, okay, all that excited. Maybe this brings the excitement back, a big name like this. Here's another thing I got a question for you guys. How good of a coach is Lincoln Riley? He got handed the keys to a Maserati. He didn't have to build anything in Oklahoma. It was built.
Yeah, he just had to keep the engine running. For a quarterback.
That's true. His quarterbacks have been absurd. He's just like, you know, like what happens when they don't have a guy like that, you know? I mean, they're not in the playoff this year.
Yeah. I mean, so here's what I'm saying is, you know, do people want to follow you and your vision after, you know, you make moves like that? How do you go from telling recruits like, hey, I'm your guy, I'm your coach for the next 4 years, and then bounce to the next job, and then go tell the next recruits that you're recruiting to your new school the same thing? It's like, I don't know, man.
At some point, you sell your soul, and it's just like, okay, this is the contract that makes me no longer 100% give a shit about all the things I used to care about. Because
right,
if I have to, I just ride off into the sunset.
Right, and I'm not saying that coaches have to stay in their at their school until they get fired or die, retire or whatever. But
that's a shirt: get fired or die.
I love that one. We need to make that one. And it's only after KF fully retires from the game and shows that you can do it all at one school, Khabib style.
Right.
He just retires undefeated after 40 years and no rape cases, Jopa. And then, you know, rides off in the sunset.
Here's my thing is, like, I understand guys take better jobs, take bigger jobs. For these two instances, the way in which it was done is very distasteful. In the middle of a season.
Yeah.
Teams are still competing at a high level.
Yeah. I really dislike that part of it. I'm actually okay. Like, coaches are going to do what they're going to do.
Like, the new standard. Coaches have been doing this for years now. They just all of a sudden decide that they're going to leave in the middle of the year. Like, tons of Division I AA coaches over the past few years have been just like, oh, yeah, I took this, you know, Florida job, or I took this yada yada job. Like, we've seen that.
It looks a little worse when it's a team that, I mean, Notre Dame.
I mean, Notre Dame's a couple losses away from being in the playoff right now.
They might still be. Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. They might still be having a national championship opportunity. That's what's sticky to me. I don't know. And I understand that, like, when coaches get fired and now there's a job opening, there's a window on that opportunity. So it's a dirty game with millions of dollars attached to it. This provoked a tweet from you, Kevin, about Coach Ferentz.
Yeah. I mean, you saw it. Obviously, Drake, I don't know if you saw it, but I was like, you know, this really making me think about how, as a player, I probably took for granted knowing that KF was never leaving.
It never even entered our mind.
The thought never even crossed my mind.
For granted. It was so guaranteed that it would have been a fallacy. It was that's a fairy tale.
Yeah. Right? I was just going to say fairy tale that coach Ferentz would have not been our coach.
Yeah. That's just simply a fairy tale. So it's something that we were so spoiled with, like, you know, the comfort of, you know, a bank vault, you put your money in a bank vault. You're like, that money's not going anywhere. we were the bank vault of football programs. Like, we knew we were going to have our head coach no matter when we went back. Right.
Felt good. So, felt real good. Let's do that's an interesting topic, and it'll continue to roll on as more coaches leave. I'm real interested to see, you know, the other hot coaches on the lot, like Matt Campbell. I'm really interested to see if he really tries to become the Kirk Ferentz of Ames, or if he bounces.
I mean, if he stays, I'd respect it.
I would too.
You know, he might have coached himself out of these jobs. You know, supposed to have the best team ever, go 7-5, but hey, they were together.
Iowa State is going to have to.
I don't think he coached himself out of it, because, like, you look at a guy like PJ Fleck. I know his record was really good at his previous school, but I don't think Minnesota hired him for his record. I think they hired him because of his persona and, like, what they thought he could bring to his program, like him personally being the face of the program, even though we think he's douchey. Like, that's something that universities can get behind.
Sure. And
Matt Campbell seems to be a pretty stand-up dude and seems to be like a guy that his players rallied behind big time. So I think those are just the two reasons that a program would take him.
Sure. No, I'm not saying that. I was more saying, like, what was I trying to say? He didn't have a great year, but these universities are throwing money at coaches who are, in my opinion, overrated.
Yeah.
Like, PJ Fleck just got a huge contract extension. Franklin got a 10-year contract extension. He went 6-4.
Well, when you look at what KF makes, when you look at the very modest salary that KF brings in as compared to other elite Division I head coaches, like, say what you want about the season. I was just as big of a critic as anybody about some of the certain performance aspects of the season. But Coach Ferentz found a way to take a team with a not very talented offense and quarterback issues to a Big Ten championship. And he's making, like, way down the list when it comes to coaches' salaries across the country.
Yeah, I think it's $4 million a year or something like that.
4.5, I think. And some of these coaches might be making upwards of 10,
yeah.
Which, I mean, KF's performance alone would warrant him, up near the top tier of the Big Ten for just from year after year consistency.
Let's just say this.
Let alone tenure.
Let's just say this. If KF, for some reason, were to, like, if this 2020 thing with the racial allegations, if that would have pushed KF out of Iowa City somehow, you know, every school that was even semi-questioning if they wanted their head coach would have been like, well, KF's available. Every coach in the country or every team in the country would have been like, Ferentz is, like, assuming that he wanted to go somewhere. Like, he's just that type of guy. We could talk about that forever.
He got NFL offers like every other year.
Right.
For the longest time.
Yeah. The reviews on the podcast are always fun. And I just
made that one, please.
Yeah. I'm going to
tell us how dog shit we are.
This one was funny because I know that Drake said the comment. 1 star. Title of the review is not great. This is from a while back too. Go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, a rating at minimum, 1 to 5 stars. It could be anything.
Make it a 1 star.
Yeah.
Tell us what we are. Tell us we're trash.
These guys are entertaining and we'll give you a player's viewpoint. I would give it more stars, but some of the language is rough and I think this is a different one because, it goes on to say it's not why I listen to the show. Talking about graphic violence and shooting people in the head with a 9, etc.
Well, I wouldn't have said 9 because I carry a 45, so it would have been you if it said 9mm.
That crap gets old, especially in this world's environment. Grow up. You may be washed up, but you guys could still clean up your act a bit.
Or we could be who we are.
Human beings. Yeah. I'm...
Not some fraud on the internet.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Clean up my act. You know. Good Next. One, though. Insiders look at college football. Join Tyler, Kevin, and Drake in a wacky tour of all things Iowa football, from the nuts and bolts of offense, defense, special teams, to holes punched in walls and thrown trash cans. This podcast has it all.
Yeah. See, there we go. That guy understands what we're trying to do, man. We're trying to be football oriented with a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. I just scrolled past the one that said
Drake. I remember when Drake threw the trash can at you.
It was good. Yeah. It's an all-time story. The best review we've ever gotten is that 3-star that said Drake likes to mention dicks. Oh man,
I do.
Latest CFP rankings.
We have a segment based off of them.
It's true. Latest CFP rankings before we go to a break. Georgia number one, Michigan up to number two, Alabama three, Cincinnati holding on to the four spot. I don't know if you guys saw the extended rankings. Anything of interest there, or is this thing pretty much black and white as we head into championship weekend?
Thought interesting. There's no Wisconsin or Purdue in there.
Yeah, right. And I saw a tweet that was like, I don't know who it was. It was comparing Purdue to one of these other teams, and then they had the same record and compared their wins, and Purdue had two ranked wins or something like that. And yeah, two ranked wins, and the other team didn't have any. So it's just like, I don't know about some of these. Iowa at 13, probably zero chance to make the football playoff. There's like a 2% chance if some wild shit happens.
What else?
Well, that's better than Alabama, the 1% chance.
So essentially, yes. Lucy Rodine actually did a great video on this. She makes content basically, I think, for her job. So this was a funny little video she did on Twitter. And then Drake just disappeared out of the call. So Georgia would have to absolutely smack Alabama.
Yeah.
Iowa would have to convincingly win against Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati would have to lose this weekend. Yep. So that would take Michigan, Alabama, and Cincinnati, all three of those teams out, which means we need three teams to replace those. Oklahoma State or Baylor is probably going to take that spot if that were to happen, right? So whoever wins that, yeah, winner gets in.
I mean, you could argue if Baylor wins, we still have a better resume, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Say the winner of the Big 12 championship gets in. Oklahoma State's five, Baylor is nine. So those are two of the next teams in front of Iowa. BYU isn't going to get in. They're 12. Michigan State isn't going to get in because the winner of the Big 10 championship would be ahead of them. So they're at 11. Oregon's not getting in at 10, even with a win in the Pac-12 championship. They're at 10. Ole Miss is 10-2. They're not in the SEC championship. They're probably not getting in. Ohio State, they're not in the Big Ten championship, so probably not them. Notre Dame would be the other team that's probably going to get in with no coach. And so it would be Georgia, Notre Dame, the winner of the Big 12 championship, and then basically a choice between Alabama, Iowa, Ohio State, and Oregon, and we would be a Big Ten champion. So, you know. But again, convincingly have to beat Michigan, right? I don't know. It's probably not worth discussing anymore.
Yeah, it's not even worth it.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Steve Dace about the Michigan Wolverines and preview this title game. All right. After the break, we are joined by someone that is familiar to the Iowa fan media podcast landscape. His name is Steve Dace. You know him probably from Dace and Miller, which is a little bit before my time. I'm 27, Steve, so I'm a little younger than the
You're killing me already, brother. But yeah, I hear you.
The podfathers of Iowa football and sort of and John Miller is really a guy that I respect, and you guys were very well liked when you guys were still doing that show. A show that continues today, right? Bigger 10.
Yep. We do it Bigger 10. It's on YouTube now. You can watch that every single week, you bet.
Not only that, but he runs the Michigan podcast, or just Michigan podcast, as a Michigan native. So we have brought Steve on today to help us do a little reconnaissance on the opponent. Steve, neither of us were supposed to be here today. Going into Saturday, it was going to be an Ohio State Wisconsin Big Ten championship, which we've seen right. all too often over the last decade, and then things flipped, and somehow Iowa pulled off a miracle comeback in Lincoln. Michigan gets over the hump, which is where I kind of want to start. As a Michigan fan, two games out of the last two decades for the Wolverines, what was it like to get over that hump finally with Harbaugh?
Well, first, let me say this. My producer, Aaron, is a huge fan of your podcast. He's a lifelong Iowa fan. So if I did not mention that, okay, he was going to shut my mic off on the show tomorrow. So I wanted to make sure to give you guys some recognition with that.
But, well, that's fantastic.
But just to show you what it was like, I made the decision after what happened in 2019. So in 2018, we were favored in Columbus for the first time in 20 years. And it was Urban's last game. And we didn't just get embarrassed, guys. We got emasculated. They took our manhood from us. And they could have put up 70. They called the dogs off with, you know, 8 minutes to go. And they hit a 60 burger. In 2019, we changed the offense, tried to get more like Ohio State, frankly. And we had not had a single 300-yard passing day, only one, actually, in the Harbaugh era. Then we had three in a row, and it looked like we were ready to go. They embarrassed us again on our own field. And that's why I did something I've never done before as a Michigan fan. I turned the Michigan-Ohio State game off before its conclusion.
Wow.
And my son and I, we just went to the theater to see Creed II. We both agreed our testosterone levels were dangerously low after witnessing. Okay. And I vowed after that, I'm never watching another one of these games live ever again until Michigan shows me it's a rivalry. It was turning me into a fan I don't want to be, where it felt like no matter what we did the rest of the year, it was a failure, and I'm bitter and I'm angry. Jim Harbaugh was my favorite player growing up as a kid. And I didn't like the person it made me. So I just decided I just have to eject. So I'm not watching it again. I already made arrangements to go to the movies, went and saw Ghostbusters Afterlife, recorded the game just in case they won, but I did not watch it live. And I was ready for the Rose Bowl, man. I was already making arrangements to go out there, figured after we beat Penn State, we'd be the highest ranked Big Ten team, not in the playoff. And so I was already making arrangements, my son and I, to go to the Rose Bowl. We were really excited about that. And I had no idea what happened in the game. Kept my phone and everything off, went and enjoyed Ghostbusters. I get home, watch the game on the DVR. And I'm just going to tell you, man, it was emotional. And I was like, seriously, like in tears afterwards.
That's awesome.
You know, Noah and I gave each other like a huge man hug after, you know, and he's going to be 15 in February. And the last, he went from going as Jim Harbaugh for Halloween twice in a row. He barely watches, like, every basketball game we watch together. He barely will watch Michigan football. And he was going to go to the movie with me and made the decision at the end, you know what? I need to give him one more chance. So he stayed behind to watch it live. And we were both just, it just restored our faith as fans that, yeah. You know, and it made it fun again, I guess is the best way I would describe it.
On your Bigger 10 confidence points segment, I believe, you gave 6 points to Ohio State over Michigan, which I think speaks to this almost not giving up, but setting aside of your fandom. And you're a stronger fan than most, because many just, they put themselves through it and it turns them into people. We take shit on our podcast because people are like, why are you yelling at us for being fans? And it's because sometimes it gets too far. And so it's interesting that you just put it on the DVR. What happened? Well, I mean, what was this Michigan team able to do that past weren't?
So early in the week, I listened to a bunch of sports handicapping podcasts I typically listen to, because I like dabbling in that for fun.
Sure.
And I listened, and I only listen to guys that over the last few years have proven to be really good at this. Okay. And they all said the same thing about the game. They all said, when I look at my own power ratings, this should be a 2 or 3 point line, but you have to bet Ohio State. And I started thinking about this, just let me take my fan hat off, because sometimes as fans, we forget that you can have a negative bias.
Yeah.
Like when you've had your scrotum kicked in, you know, Miller and I used to call these scrote kicks. Okay. when you get your scrotum kicked in so many times in a row, it can have you're the fan who's like, here we go again. First sign of adversity, first incomplete pass. Right. Cause now you're damaged. And yeah. I started wondering, now, no way a handicapper, when their own numbers are showing it should be a 2 or 3 point spread and the line is 8, nobody is going to voluntarily lay another 6 points than what their own lines say. In fact, they would hammer that, thinking they have found a market inefficiency.
Right.
And then I watched as 94% of the money came in on Ohio State, and the line never went down. That's not how it typically works. That's Vegas is willing to assume that liability. They're fine with it. They're fine taking all that one-sided action. So just as a hedge against myself, I put $100 down on Michigan plus 250. Needless to say, that paid off very well. Okay. And I think if you look at why Michigan's analytics are so strong, this is not the most talented team that Jim has had. The 2019 team or 2016 team you guys beat that night, 19 players from that roster were in NFL training camps the next July.
Stacked.
19. All right. We're not going to have 19 guys in NFL training camps this July because most of our best talent is actually in the 20 and 21 recruiting classes.
Yep.
All right. But the talent is more equally dispersed. If you look at the receivers on that 2016 team you guys beat, none of those guys, including Amari Darbo, Iowan, I've met members of his family, great kid, would not start on this team. I mean, those guys didn't play much in the NFL. The True. Level of speed and athleticism on the outside, dramatically better. Hassan Haskins is, if Devion Smith was a CrossFitter, the level of athleticism, it's a similar running style, but just a different level of athleticism. And we didn't have any backs like Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum
right.
with that kind of explosiveness. I mean, you guys saw Corum busted off a 57-yarder on an ankle and a half
yeah.
against Ohio State. And then if you look at the rest of the team, there it's just the weakest spot on the team, I guess I would say weakest, is the quarterback. And the starter has a lifetime 17-3 touchdown interception ratio.
Jeez.
And his backup is a 5-star that had about 50 offers and was the starting quarterback for the IMG Academy last year. Mm. So this is a well-balanced team. But here's the thing though, guys, and this is what's key is whenever coaches are going to like purge staff, that's usually 95% of the time, that means their ass is fired in a year. And typically there's a difference between reacting in leadership and being reactionary. A lot of times when coaches make these moves, it's reactionary. I got to throw it. I'm throwing this guy into the volcano to save my own job. Like what right. Dan Mullen tried to do at Florida last week, for example.
Scott Frost, Nebraska.
Is another example. Yeah. Because now reacting is now where you include your, this is where what your football coach did after, regardless of what you think of the merits of the claims or the controversy or what the actual issues were, the fact that those things even came to the forefront would have sunk most coaches and programs.
100%.
Right.
Yep.
And then you start 0-2 after that. Holy cow. Okay. And I think this is now where I'm not just going to throw Chris Doyle into the fire, but I'm actually going to do this introspectively and look at myself. Are there things, even if I think much of this is overblown, are there things that I could, because I have been doing this since 1998, are there things maybe I could update? Maybe things I don't understand. I've been doing this since before there was iPhones. And Jim, this is what Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame. That's the only other example I can think mm-hmm. of in recent times where a coach midway reinvented himself and it succeeded. And Jim did this. He didn't just throw Don Brown overboard, but he went back to Mike Hart, who he had a long running feud with back to when Jim said Michigan's academics were overrated when he was coaching at Stanford. And Mike Hart was a player then and went after him by name. He went back and humbled himself and reunited that relationship and brought him home. And there was just a level of maturity here, humbleness, frankly, that I think he recognized when he couldn't escape to the NFL last December, that his stock was pretty low, that he couldn't go back to the NFL now. And I think he's like, you know what, man, I got to look at the man in the mirror here. Something's not right. And then he looked at the culture of the team. And where's the win for Michigan? Where's the win for one another? You know, I've watched a ton of Michigan games where our guys get their helmets ripped off and stuff, and Michigan players just go back to the huddle. And then you see our podcast network with old school guys like Doug Skeen, who, you know, won 4 Big Ten championships when he played here, cussing his brains out, losing his mind. That's not how we play football in Michigan. Your teammate's helmet gets ripped off and you just jog back to the huddle. That'd have been an effing fist fight when I played. And Bo would have said, last one in's running the most. Okay. And then you saw the reaction Saturday when that happened. And mm-hmm. you saw our offensive lineman go over and corner those guys and start intimidating them. You saw the way our players followed them into the tunnel at halftime and just badgered them and hammered them and the whole way into their locker room. That's what Michigan football used to look like. It used to look like, frankly, Iowa football with higher recruited players is the yeah. best way I can explain it. Okay?
Absolutely.
And that's the way it looked for 30 plus years. And that's why it won a hell of a lot of games. And it hasn't looked that way. And it's not scheme so much as it was culture. And I think that's what Jim had to admit is he's responsible for that. Mm-hmm. And that we had turned into this NFL training factory. Like last year, when we weren't going to play in the Big Ten, Michigan announces they're going to do a pro day. Ohio State didn't even do that. Okay. We did a great job of getting guys prepped for the NFL, not a great job of winning significant games. And I think Jim finally realized, what did I do wrong here? And I've got to be, if I'm not a father figure, I at least got to be Uncle Buck, man. I'm not involved in my kids in the off season. You know, they don't speak of me as a leader. I'm just a football coach. And so, you know, recruits now come into the house, kids now having an opportunity to, you know, we had one of our defensive starters, I think it was Brad Hawkins, said that the last 2 years under Don Brown, if he had a question or issue with the scheme, he was not permitted to address it with him.
Wow.
These are all, so I think what Jimmy did is he changed the culture and realized it's not about bells and whistles. You have too many advantages at Michigan. It's about what you do and what you can control. And I think you've seen, you give him a lot of credit for that humility and doing something about it.
Culture is a buzzword for sure. And it's one that a lot of people on the outside, from a former player's perspective, just don't, and it's not their fault. It's very, very hard to grasp how, how much a culture determines results and the little things like how they react if a helmet gets pulled off, the togetherness of, I'm not letting a guy get hit in the mouth without a response.
Right.
You know, when you see guys starting to fight for each other, and that makes a lot of sense because this team does feel balanced all the way outside of the statistical stuff to the culture side of things. And they're playing good football at the right time. This is, you mentioned the 2016 game. I snapped the ball on the Keith Duncan kick to beat you guys. This game is a close one. Almost always. It's rare. I have the entire history of Iowa, Michigan, which is heavily favored to the Michigan side, but it is hard to find some serious beatdowns. It's a very close thing all the way back to when Harbaugh was quarterback. Of course, we all know the history. Is there some element of that in a Michigan fan's mind going into this Big Ten championship, even though it's a 10.5-point line or wherever it sits now today, that just because of this matchup and this in the history of this rivalry, that it might feel a little closer than it is on paper?
I don't see how there couldn't be, knowing the history that you just talked about. I mean, you go back to October 19th, 1985, one versus two. Michigan's number two in the nation, loses to Iowa. Only lost that year, finished number two in the country. Mm-hmm. We've already referenced that 2016 game several times where I think Michigan had just beaten Maryland like 59-3 or something. And it wasn't that close the week prior, and then goes on the road and just makes mistakes and puckers.
And we had gotten embarrassed at Penn State the week before.
Right. And I think, you know, in the 80s and 90s, when this happened, it's because, Hayden Fry changed the Big Ten because of the scheme that he brought to the league. He was the first coach to really come here and bring modern NFL style, pro style offenses. And that's really, and then other coaches came along later, Mike White at Illinois and others, and emulated that. And that opened up the conference from the Big Two era in the 80s. And then a decade later, I think Joe Tiller did that at Purdue when he brought kind of the air raid to the league and kind of democratized it a little bit more. So I think with Hayden, it was innovations. And I think what's happened under Kirk is the solidity of culture. It's why Michigan made, from what I understand, from the Michigan side, two different attempts after Lloyd Carr retired to lure him here.
Really?
As the coach. Yeah. So it's what frustrates Iowa fans sometimes, that I kind of know what every situation is, but it's what frustrates opponents. Crap, we know what they're going to do every situation.
Yeah.
And that's where I think this Michigan team might be a little bit less inclined to succumb to that, because if there's anything this team is, it's comfortable in its own skin. That it has an established brand. To me, the bigger challenge on the Michigan side is this is what just happened is it's the 1980 U.S. Olympic team and we just beat the Soviet Union. The problem is people forget that wasn't the gold medal game. Okay.
Yeah.
They had to come back 2 days later and play Finland, who's also pretty damn good, for the gold medal. And I think that's the issue. If the one thing I think helps Michigan here is the uncertainty and inconsistency that Iowa has at quarterback. Even if there were a C.J. Beathard or Ricky Stanzi level of quarterback here, that was at least a known commodity that you knew what he could execute effectively and consistently, this would be a perfect opportunity to get up like 10-0 early and then see if Michigan gets a little rattled. Yeah. Okay. But the fact that Iowa doesn't really have that at quarterback, I think will give Michigan maybe a little more time to get punched in the mouth a couple of occasions and realize, oh, crap, yeah, we didn't win anything last week. We just earned our pride back.
I would say this Michigan team has a full 60 minutes to get punched in the mouth, and they still all are going to have the opportunity. This one, you know, we talked a little bit on our recap of the weekend that came out today. It's not going to be a game like the following year after we beat you guys. We murdered Ohio State, just an absolute anomaly of a game in Kinnick Stadium. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be one of those because this team isn't built that way. This team is oddly enough built like 99% of teams are not. They win games on special teams and defense.
Right.
And they drag. I mean, they drag like a dead body, the offense along. And the quarterback situation, I couldn't even tell you what we have at quarterback. Nobody knows. It's just this very bland product. It looks like we're going to be going with Petras. So, you know, for your guys' sake, he's the more seasoned guy, but he's also the less mobile guy. I'm looking at the stats here and I see Hutchinson and Ojabo lead the league 1-2 in sacks. And that doesn't bode well for Petras or this young offensive line that we have. And that's probably our biggest concern heading into the weekend. You guys lost one game this year. Michigan State gave up 37 points. I believe that was a 37-33 game. Mm-hmm. What was it about the Spartans game this year that they were able to figure out the Wolverines?
So that game was 30-14 with about 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. And that was with a controversial call before the half where Aiden had done a strip sack recovery in the end zone, and it clearly looked like it was a fumble, and it took it off the board, and we had to settle for a field goal. We were in total control of that game. We were out rushing them at that point. We were actually on pace for over 500 yards. We still hit 500 yards against them in that game. What happened in that game is that I think was another culture loss where Michigan State, there is really an Iowa State sort of a dynamic here.
And
you know, I was very close to Dan McCartney when he was coach at Iowa State, former Hawkeye, of course.
Yep.
I had intimate access to the Iowa State program. And Dan always did coach regardless of what he told y'all in public. Dude, the Iowa game was like a bowl game in September. That game was coached differently every year. Iowa State played with a ruthless, reckless abandon defensively that they didn't play the rest of the Big 12 season.
It still is, okay? By the way.
And it still probably is a little bit, all right? And I think that Michigan thought the game was over when it was 30-14. Mm. And Michigan State was like, dude, we're going to, you know, we can't go out like that. We can't get punked. And they made like four plays on fourth downs that preserved drives. And those were all the drives that they scored their touchdowns and 2-point conversions on to win. Mm. And I think that game actually helped teach Michigan a lesson that it played for the rest of the season. That I think Michigan realized we have not peaked yet. This isn't good enough. We won at Wisconsin. We won at Nebraska. Those are games we've typically lost, particularly in Madison against Wisconsin. This game we had circled all along. We didn't want to get punked by these guys again, and they did. And I kind of think, you know, at Michigan, my whole life, there's always a temptation to go, if you know your Rocky III. Sorry, I'm the old guy, so I'll make old school.
No, you're good. I know Rocky III. Okay?
Michigan's always facing a temptation to go between Clubber Lang to Rocky. All right. Where they're working out at Gold's Gym with the hotties doing photo ops, and the other guys are out there doing chin-ups on pipes in the basement, okay?
I love that. That's a fantastic analogy. I love that.
Well, thank you. And that's Michigan State with their 40 new players and 25 transfers and second-year coach, okay? They never lost that edge. And I think that game, after that game, Cree Apollo showed up and said, dude, we got to take you back downtown to the hood where you came from and teach you how this works, all right? We got to get the eye of the tiger back.
Yep.
And so now what I'm worried about, though, is I've never seen an atmosphere like that at Michigan State. And Matt Leinart said afterwards it was the best atmosphere he's ever been in for a college football game as a player or an analyst or a fan. Wow. I've never seen a post-game celebration like that at Michigan ever. I mean, like ever. I just wonder, you know, what's going on today?
Yeah.
And I know when Matt Campbell took over at Iowa State, I didn't think he was actually going to hire. I kept those people bring those tweets up and use them against me. I'm fine when I'm dumb. That was dumb. Okay. And he had this cliche win in the dark. You guys might remember some of those hashtags.
Yep.
Okay. all that stuff, actually, except when he plays y'all, has all turned out to be true. Okay. True. Michigan won this season in the dark.
Yeah.
They won the game. They won this season in January and February when we all wrote them off and thought Jim Harbaugh was just whistling past the graveyard in 12 months from being replaced probably by Matt Camp. Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
And now, though, they've got the spotlight and everybody's on them. And now the same media that said Jim Harbaugh sucked, they're like, I'm so happy for him. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what that dynamic is like. And that's why, from a Michigan fan perspective, I am grateful you don't have a more solidified quarterback position, because I do think this is a game where you could potentially get to a 10-0 quick lead and put Michigan back on their heels a little bit. And then does Michigan get out of their game plan and start doing things that's uncharacteristic for them, right?
It's funny you say that, and when you describe it that way, it's how I, as an Iowa fan, felt against Nebraska last week. Nebraska's always got this, oh, I'm a little worried about them, right? Even if they're 3-8. And similarly, their quarterback situation was in question. Logan Smothers had to come in and play. And I feel, and it's particularly because of Iowa's defense, but I just always felt like, I think we'll always be in it. Similar to how I think Michigan, no matter how this game goes early on, is always going to be in it. But if you let a team hang around, it gets dicey. And if you let Iowa hang around, they've proven that they can make it dicey. 2016, we took off on a speed train against Ohio State when they let us hang around, and we've done it several times to other teams since. It's going to be one of those situations of, I don't know if we can get up 10-0 early. I know this, and this was one of the questions I had for you. How is, because I wasn't really, it's hard to judge just by statistics. How is Michigan on special teams? Because Iowa is fantastic, and they 2 weeks in a row really have won the game because of special teams.
If you look at all the pro, in fact, I was just putting together our all Big Ten teams for Bigger Ten, and I went back and forth between Caleb Shudek and Jake Moody for first team kicker. And I decided to split that. And if you look at the top two returners, they're Charlie Jones and AJ Henning for Michigan.
Okay.
So yeah. I just decided to split the difference, and I gave us the kicker, and y'all, I put Charlie Jones as the returner.
Nice.
I think these are the two best special team units in the league. I think if you look at Football Outsiders and Pro Football Focus Analytics, Michigan special teams are very strong. This is where their depth comes into play, with the recruiting depth.
Yep.
A lot of promising youngsters. You might remember the 2016 game you played in. Devin Bush was in that game on punt coverage. And then he was a Butkus Award winner 2 years later.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot. They are always a threat to block kicks. Henning is a little scary sometimes in how he catches the ball.
Mm.
He was not the original returner. Ronnie Bell was. He's a more explosive athlete than Ronnie Bell is, but he does make me nervous a lot in how he catches the ball. But you're talking about a guy that averages about 10 yards a clip on a punt return. The punt game, we have an excellent special teams unit awesome. All the way around. Cool. To me, the game that were the Iowa's best chance to make the game that they want it to be is to see, there was a moment in the game Saturday where watching it on the replay, the only time the whole game I said, here we go again. And Michigan got off to the quick start that I thought we would get off with the emotion and everything else. And then we got the great, they made a special teams mistake. We had them pinned deep, you remember. Mm-hmm. And then we get a 3-and-out and we've got excellent field position. And Cade McNamara does something he rarely does, starts feeling himself a little bit. Frankly, the big criticism we have, we'd like to feel himself more. He takes too few risks, if anything. Sure. Okay. But he thinks he has J.J. McCarthy's arm, and he doesn't. And he tries to fit it into that window over the middle in front of the goal line, and it's picked off, right? That was the only time in the whole game I thought to myself, okay, we had our moment to go up 14-0, and we just blew it. Here we go. If that's Iowa's best shot, is for Phil to put 17 guys at the line and say, I don't care if Cade McNamara throws for 400 yards. I'm not contributing to this Hassan Haskins for Heisman campaign today. We're not doing that today.
Yeah, because
Cade gets a little greedy and thinks I'm feeling a throw that's not there. And then Iowa's, Riley Moss, and you get a touchdown that way that you couldn't get on offense.
Right.
This is the game. The more often that Iowa has to start the game outside of plus territory, the less likely Iowa's going to win the game, I believe.
100%. Yeah. Our ability to sustain very long drives is potentially the worst stat that we have this season. if we can get the ball in short fields, obviously Torrey Taylor in the punt game, forcing you guys to have 90 plus yard drives. That's going to be massive. Love to see, you know, as a former specialist myself, kickers and punters in a dome where the weather doesn't matter. There's no excuses. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be exciting mm-hmm. to watch Moody and Shudak and Torrey Taylor and everybody do their thing. Field position is going to determine this game, I think. And
did I say Jones and I meant Miller? I'm sorry about that. Forgive me.
No, okay. You're good. You're good. Okay. And field position is going to determine this game and then the turnovers, right? Like if we can force, and we've done it to guys all season, I think we lead the country in interceptions still. If we can force a couple of those and win the field position game, I think that's how we get the Wolverines to be deep in the third quarter and think, oh shit, we're in a dogfight. And Iowa's obviously good in a dogfight. Like you said, win in the dark. We'll see if Michigan is also good in a dogfight. If it comes to that, I think a lot of Iowa fans are hoping it just does. Steve Dace on the Washed Up Walk-Ons. Thank you so much for joining me today to help preview the title game, Steve.
You bet. You guys must have quite the audience, man. I heard from, when you sent the invite out on Twitter, I heard from a ton of people in my feed who are like, you should do this. We definitely dig the show. I mean, I heard of it from my producer, Aaron. So congratulations to you guys' success and your audience. And I appreciated the invite early in my career. Can I tell you a very quick story before
Absolutely.
I go?
Go ahead.
So early in my sports media career in Iowa, I was with a sports radio station that went bankrupt.
Okay.
And the former sports radio station I was with, that ending did not end amicably.
Sure.
And so they took a bunch of shots and stuff at me in the newspaper. I'm overrated. I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Not that I have all these quotes memorized, but I do. Okay. And it was 20 years ago. All right. But I'm really young.
Steve's winning. You're winning in the dark over there.
I'm winning in the dark. Well, the next day after this all goes down and it's all in the newspaper is Iowa Football Media Day. Mm-hmm. And the way they used to do it, where we'd all meet at that hotel,
yep,
down by the mall, have a big banquet. I'd have lunch with Norm Parker every year, because Norm was from Michigan, and we didn't talk old Michigan, Iowa, Michigan State, where he was formerly at. War stories. Norm and I had a great relationship for several years when he was at Iowa. So I'd always have lunch with Norm, and then we'd go down to the practice field and interview the players when it was 7,000 degrees. And I'd get a parking ticket every time, no matter where I freaking parked. He'd always hammer me.
Okay? Hey, join the club, baby.
So we're getting ready to go into the lunch during the banquet, and Kirk comes up to me and sits down next to me, and he puts his arm on my shoulder and he's holding the newspaper, and it's the article about me getting canned and getting destroyed by my former employer.
Oh man.
And he sits down and he goes, I got to tell you, Steve, I remember when I got fired with the Ravens, and it was like the worst. I thought at the time it was like the worst moment of my life. I wasn't sure about my future in coaching. And, you know, I went FCS, what was 1AA still back then, and kind of had to, you know, build myself back up. And now I'm in Iowa. I've got my dream job. He's like giving me a pep talk. Okay. Now this was 2002. So he's on the brink of his breakthrough season. He hasn't done it yet. All right. Wow. Let alone all the success that he has. Above me on the wall, I don't know if the camera can pick it up or not. I mean, I've got pictures of Ference with, you know, my children when they were babies. I have, you know, I've never been an Iowa fan, as most of your audience is going to know.
Yep.
But I have spent a lot of time early in my career when I did sports exclusively around Kirk and around your program, 100% class act. And I just wanted to reiterate to your audience, here I am. I'm not even a fan. I'm a member of the enemy media. And he hasn't really, he can't even figure out how to get his buyout done with Bob Bowlesby yet, because they're still arguing about that. All right. And yet he comes up, picks me out, comes up and makes a point of giving me a pep talk. It'll be 20 years next August since that happened. And I have never forgotten it. And it really, really helped me get through a difficult time. And I just wanted to share that story here in front of a large audience of Iowa fans on the podcast.
That's incredible. And it doesn't surprise me. We had a manager on one time, and he said something like the first day he walked in the complex, Coach Ference was the first one to greet him and already knew the guy by name, hadn't even started with the program yet.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Kirk Ference has a unique, almost magical ability to be personable. And, you know, it's part of the reason why we're so diehard for him as former players with me and my two co-hosts. And a story like that is just, it's just one of those that comes up. You're like, wow, just the guy just proves it over and over again. So, and Harbaugh echoed that, I think, in his media comments earlier this week. So I'm really excited. Michigan's first appearance in the title game will be Iowa's second since the inception in about a decade ago. So very excited for this matchup. And again, Steve, thank you for joining us so much.
You bet, man. Take care, guys. Go Blue. God bless. Merry Christmas, everybody. And good luck every game except Saturday.
Yes. We'll be back in a second. And we're back. Tech guy.
Have to look up a couple games.
Tech guy with the edits. Yeah, look up, get your picks up. I'm gonna talk for a second here. Assuming that, well, let's just go through it. Let's say that the chalk lines up. Michigan beats Iowa this weekend. Michigan's going to be in the playoff. Ohio State is likely going to go to the Rose Bowl. Michigan State is probably going to find themselves in the Orange Bowl, or is that a
Citrus Bowl? I think
they would find themselves in the Citrus Bowl. I saw it somewhere else that was different. They were going somewhere different, and then Iowa got the Citrus Bowl. If I were to win, Iowa were to win, it would matter where we were ranked, because Rose Bowl takes the highest Big Ten team that is not in the playoff. So where do we go after that?
I think we're a Big Ten champion, though. We still go to the Rose Bowl.
You think the champion goes regardless?
Yeah, if the champion's not in the playoff, goes to the Rose Bowl.
Okay. Well, then if we win, we go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Because we're probably not going to the playoff. If we lose, it's probably Citrus or
Outback Bowl, baby.
Man, Outback Bowl at 10-3 would hurt. But it feels like an 8-4 bowl to me, because that's when we went to it, when we were 8-4. But I don't know. Outback Bowl is a good bowl. You know,
it's a great bowl. Hawks fans love it down there.
Outback Bowl is one of the most fun, dude. Tampa is a great place to go spend a few days as a college kid.
I would love to see the Hawks land in Orlando, though, and play in the Citrus, which I believe
that was one I always wanted as a player, and we never got to go to.
And I believe the matchup in that game is the Pac-12 champion.
I only saw it as SEC.
Was it Citrus?
It might be at large now. They shift who goes to what.
Pac-12 champion goes to the Rose Bowl, Clue.
Yeah. Well, so maybe the next best. The Verbo Citrus Bowl. Last season it was Northwestern versus Auburn, so it is SEC. Yeah. So would it be Ole Miss?
No, Ole Miss is probably going to the Sugar Bowl. It'd be the next team down, which
Kentucky?
No, not Kentucky.
Who is it?
Could be Alabama.
Oh shit! Yeah, because they wouldn't be. Oh, you think no. Why would Ole Miss go to the Sugar and not Alabama?
True.
Are you just because that's probably based off rankings as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But right, it's
Ole Miss.
So it's one of those two teams, though. Assuming Georgia wins.
Yeah, it's obviously assuming Georgia wins.
That would
be probably one of those. Yeah.
That would be. Hey, do we want Bama? Fuck it.
Does Bama want us?
I think
that's
so.
A great question, Kev, here, right there.
You know what? Play the game in Lambeau Field on January 1st, and I bet it's a different outcome than if you play it down in Texas or Florida or somewhere.
100%. I say it all the time. One, these SEC teams don't do home and home series. They like to do these bullshit little neutral site games.
Yep.
Two, interconference play or pre-conference play is in August, September, the hot part of the season. So if they did do a home, you know, they come up to the Midwest and it's still 75 degrees. I want to do some home series late in the year. I want to see those damn SEC schools come up to Wisconsin and play in 20 degree weather when it's snowing.
Give us.
I want to see them come up to one of these bowl games on Yankee Stadium where the field's actually frozen.
Imagine what they would have looked like on that ice rink?
Hey, we beat Nebraska 7 years in a row on Black Friday. Toss them to the curb. Give us a home and home with Alabama game week 12 of the season on Black Friday. Give it to us. See what happens. I bet that game's a whole lot closer than the South thinks it might be. You know?
Yeah, dude, they don't know how to play in the cold.
I would love to see a team full of 70 dudes who hang out at no temperature ever below 60 come and play in 22 degree weather. I would love to see it. That their morale, just how much they would want to be there, would almost that's like maybe a touchdown on the line right there. I would love to see it.
I would love to see it. Those specialists that
start
kicking a rock.
Yeah, hey Rodrigo Blankenship, come kick in the windy Midwest. You couldn't even make a game winner in the dome in the SEC championship. So yeah, I don't know. You tell me. Pisses me off. All right, let's move on. Everyone's favorite. DJ Kevin. Yes.
Yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get it up. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up.
And they stay there. What do we got, Kev?
All right, boys. Well, it's one of the best weeks of the year.
It's a great week.
It's probably second place to last week, though. That rivalry week is a great week.
I'll agree with that, especially last week. The games were absurd last weekend.
They were great. It was just great football to watch. I mean,
nothing beats championship week, Kev. I can't agree with that.
I don't know, man. Rivalry week.
When your team is involved in championship week, nothing beats it.
It's a little extra zest.
This is all the marbles, dude. This is one for all the marbles.
Yeah, it is.
I will say, Drake,
every marble.
Drake, you're right. I've been
I'm just saying, as like a fan watching,
yeah,
you got all these games, all these teams that hate each other's guts.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I'll tell you this, I'm excited as hell to watch Georgia Alabama. I want to see legit, like, okay, what are we working with here?
I'm really interested in that one too. And we'll start it off right there. I got Georgia covering the 6.5 versus Bama. My one concern is, who has Georgia played this year? If you look at their schedule, it's really not great.
It's not great.
Their best win is versus Arkansas and Kentucky, who are barely in the top 25 right now.
Yeah, I think they're 8-4.
They're 22, 23. The SEC East is really weak, and they didn't really they played Clemson opening the year. Clemson's starting to play better, but kind of ended up being a paper tiger at the beginning of the year.
No paper tiger.
So that'll be interesting to see, but Georgia has won convincingly every single game. They don't appear to have a weakness so far. Offense, defense, special teams, they are a great football team. Alabama has looked a little vulnerable at times.
Definitely.
Last weekend, they couldn't move the ball. They're going up against a better defense this week. A few weeks ago, they've given up points, and I think – Georgia's got a solid offense. So give me the Bulldogs. Best team in college football all year long, and I think they're going to prove it again this Saturday. I also like the over in the Pittsburgh-Wake Forest game at 72.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a 39-36 outcome.
You got two teams that are good at offense and bad at defense, dude.
Jesus.
Dude, there's two games that stick in my mind. It's when Pitt played Tennessee, week three.
Yeah.
It was like a 40-40 game. Or when they lost to Western Michigan, it was in the upper 40s again. Wake Forest and Army combined for like 150 points. Dude, I think there's going to be points galore in this game.
Okay.
So give me the astronomically large open.
I got a feeling where we're going with this third pick.
You do?
Well,
that's the bonus
fourth. Okay, pick. That's the fourth pick. Okay.
That's the bonus fourth pick. And then I like San Diego State -5.5 versus Utah State in the Mountain West Championship.
Okay.
Fourth pick. We'll save it off for the last.
We'll save number four.
We got to talk that one, because there's a few details we're gonna go over there. Man, it's such a good slate. You know, it's just like, it's so diluted down into, or condensed down into, just quality games, championships everywhere. I'm going to take App State -3 over Louisiana. Okay. I'm pretty sure Louisiana just lost their coach to Florida.
Yes, that is correct.
So, you know, there is the aspect of, well, maybe they stand up and just play the best game of their life. One last hurrah for their coach, or, you know, like, you know, I don't know.
For that asshole that just left us?
Or, well, you know, maybe they like him, and maybe they, or maybe it's like a fuck you to him. I don't know. There's a whole lot of reasons where you see coaching changes. You know, the Raiders lost Gruden, and the first game out without Gruden, they come out like banging this year, right? I'm going to, so App State minus three. I'm going to take Utah minus 2.5 over Oregon.
So that's an interesting game. It was like 2 weeks ago where Utah slapped the shit out of them.
Yeah.
How does Oregon adjust?
Right.
Interesting. That's a Friday night game.
Yeah. And I bet on Oregon, I think, twice.
You did took Oregon versus Utah.
That and game. And they fucked me. So this is just, you know, spite bet. And then, Jesus. I mean, Georgia, Alabama, over unders 50, 49.5. I'm going under on that. I think, okay. This is on the thought that Georgia's defense is exactly who we thought they were, right?
I mean, they don't even have to be who we thought they were to, you
know, like, I see this Alabama Georgia game as like a 28-14 game, you know?
Sure.
Drake?
All right, boys. I like that under pick too, Kluber. Nobody can see it because nobody watches the YouTube, but I was hammering the under there. First of all, give me the Philadelphia Eagles minus 6.5 at the New York Jets. Philly's okay. Playing really good right now. They're not afraid of the cold weather. The Jets are the Jets. I know that. Yeah. Zach Wilson's also questionable. Not good for them.
Okay.
Second game, give me San Francisco minus 3.5 at Seattle, because Seattle's not anywhere near 3.5 points within San Francisco as of the past. Well, since Russ got back, he's been playing like dog shit. And so San Francisco's defense was playing good. I like them. And then third game, give me Jacksonville plus 13 at the Rams. The Rams just haven't been 13 points better than anybody.
And I like Jacksonville, that pick.
Jacksonville hasn't been that bad. So yeah. There's my three.
I like the Jacksonville pick. And Siege is rocking the Jaguars down there, holding it down. That brings us to
the consensus pick of the week.
And the most important
hammer of all hammers.
Just the lock of the millennium.
Can't lose.
Falcon is gassed up and ready to go to another galaxy.
And they're driving straight to Indianapolis. And they're putting all their money down.
Every single dollar on their mortgage. Remortgaging their house, every cent.
On the Wolverines money line.
Money line.
It just can't be. There's actually no chance. It's not humanly possible for the Michigan Wolverines to lose this game.
They've already etched their name in the trophy and sent it to Ann Arbor. The team was pumping it up with the Big Ten trophy already in their facility. They stole our celebration and did it in Ann Arbor with the trophy already.
They're prepping for, in fact, this week at practice, they were prepping for a couple of the Big 12 teams, potentially Notre Dame, Cincinnati. They don't know who they're going to get. You know, it might be Bama. They were looking at all their film. They didn't watch any Iowa film this week. It's in the bag.
They don't even have jerseys without bowl patches on them anymore. They already have the playoff game destination patched on their jersey.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure they got their bowl packages too. They already got their gifts.
The gifts.
So
did Gary Barta ever tell them they're in the playoff?
Barta called them, said, "Hey, you guys are in."
And he even gave them their seed.
Yeah. They know, but nobody else.
The seed we are going to give you if you beat Iowa and money line don't lie.
And we know that that's happening. So money line, Michigan, and our picks have done really well. So we hope that they continue to do well. And
our mortal locks have been stellar.
Yeah. They've all gone the same way. So that's what we're hoping for. And I'm just happy that we get to be there and watch Michigan just win that game because it's a no doubter. In reality,
we'll see you sick freaks in downtown Indy.
Yeah. In reality, we are really excited to meet all of you this weekend. For those that are listening, Drake and Kevin, this is an odd sort of episode for them. We didn't talk about the game at all, but I did 32 minutes of game talk with Steve. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. You've listened to that at this point. And it's going to be a dogfight. The clear mismatches, the defensive line of Michigan, really the defensive front versus our running game. We got to be able to establish something. We got to find a way to score points. And it would be a miracle if Iowa did win this game and we didn't somehow find a win in the turnover battle and points on special teams or defense. So it's really that simple. Spencer Petras is your starting quarterback. I don't truly think it matters that much. I'm happy with it. And we need a huge defensive performance. And also very excited for Torrey Taylor and Caleb Shudak in the inside environment. No cold balls, 72. No cold footballs and no cold real balls, right? Because that matters. Can't have your nuts being cold when you're trying to smoke one through the uprights, you know? Had a bunch of people. I do want to mention this. We had a bunch of people named to all Big Ten special teams, defense, offense. Riley Moss, the Phil Parker resume continues to build. Tatum Woodson, defensive back of the year, 5 of the last 10. Dude.
That's got to help his draft stock.
I mean, he didn't even play four games.
Three or four games.
That's insanity.
Yeah. He had a pretty good year. He's a pretty damn good cornerback.
Charlie Jones, the returner of the year in the Big Ten, elite.
Tyler Linderbaum.
Linderbaum today came out offensive lineman of the year. And then we had a bunch of other people. Caleb Shudak was the second team kicker, third team kicker. I'm not sure what he was named. Torrey Taylor was given honorable mention in his own conference. So revenge tour
is insane.
Yeah. So he's on the revenge tour next year. He's going to average 75 yards. We are stoked to see you guys.
He's going to go home and kick koalas for 6 months. He's going to be so pissed.
Yes. You're right. We are going to have t-shirts. We're going to have flags at Tin Roof in Indianapolis from 3 to 6 on Saturday. Come hang out, meet the boys. We'll actually have three mini helmets that we're going to give away as well. Right, Kev? Don't forget those.
I'm definitely going to forget those.
If Kevin forgets those, he's kicked off the podcast for good. We're going to do a live radio show from 4 to 6. We're going to hang out and it's going to be absurd. And then we're all going to go watch the game. So this weekend could not be more hype. And we get to experience it with all of you for the first time as a collective podcast. We're super excited to do it. And this thing continues to be what it is because of you guys. So 273. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We'll see you in Indy. Peace.